Hello, I'm Marcus Louth, and welcome to the latest edition of the UFO Insight Podcast, where we examine all things UFOs and aliens, conspiracies and mysteries, and all aspects of the paranormal. Okay, today we'll examine some of the strangest and most bizarre claims of alien abduction, essentially some that many people might dismiss, whether for the outright outlandishness of the claims or simply because of suspicions around the account or the witness themselves. Indeed, each of these encounters are as outrageous as they are thought-provoking. Incidentally, all of the encounters we are going to examine here, as well as many others, can be read in full in our book From Deep Within the Archives of UFO Insight. We will start with what could be, potentially at least, one of the earliest recorded cases of alien abduction of the 20th century. The strange account would appear in a little-known local newspaper in the summer of 1978 in Finland. The account tells of the 1917 encounter of a Finnish woman who, after vanishing for several days, thought to be somewhere around the Easter period, came back with a fantastic story. What's more, the incident appears to be wrapped in absolute truth. Records of the time and region show that a named witness existed, and the descriptions given by her, long before the age of flying saucers, were credible in their simplicity. Although the exact date is not known, sometime between January and Easter 1917, Annie Latou would disappear for several days. Annie lived in a small house in the northern regions of Finland, and the newspaper account claims that her home was several miles away from the local church. Local villagers, although thinking it strange that she had left without telling anyone in the village, assumed she had gone to visit her adult daughter. However, when she returned, she did so with a fantastic and mesmerizing tale of her adventures. One day, while performing her usual duties, a large apparatus like a big washing basin descended from the sky near to her home. Incidentally, at that time in Finland, wash basins had the appearance similar to large soup plates, or saucers. This strange object would land close to her house, and after several moments, a ladder emerged from it to the ground. Several small creatures made their way from the craft, and she would later describe these creatures as looking like little devils. She knew they wished her to go with them on board their ship, and despite her efforts to resist, they would forcibly take her on board. Once inside the craft, which shone greatly, they travelled very quickly, and many wonders were shown to her. She would also state that the craft was silent and did not make any noise. These details would prove to match many details given by alien abductees decades later. This perhaps not only lends an authenticity to the encounter, but suggests a continued and persistent presence on Earth by entities unknown. She would continue that she was taken above the world and between the stars. She also claimed that she could understand their language, although she didn't know why. There is no mention as to whether these creatures physically spoke to her, or whether this communication was of a telepathic nature. Annie would apparently tell her story to anyone who would listen, at least initially. However, most of the village would assume she had hallucinated the entire encounter. Some would insist she must have suffered an intense fever due to the coldness of her house. For her part, Annie Latou would remain steadfast in her version of events. Following the unearthing of the incident, Finnish UFO researchers would travel to the region, and their journey was seemingly worth it, as one of them managed to locate a living witness who could at least vouch for the existence of Annie. Although she wished to remain anonymous, she was given the title Mrs. N.N. The witness claimed to have been 7 years old at the time of the encounter. Her mother was a neighbour of Annie's, and Mrs. N.N. remembered the details of the conversations the two women would have in her home. She would claim that Annie Latou, although the newspapers would state that she was a widow, was in fact married. It is, however, likely her husband was often not at home, and Mrs. N.N. recalled Annie was always alone when in the village. She would pass away in 1930. If we fast forward 70 years to the summer of 1987 in Dulce, New Mexico in the United States, there is the alleged alien abduction of Krista Tilton, without a doubt one of the most intriguing accounts on record. To begin with, Krista had no idea she had been abducted. She did, though, realise there was a period of around 3 hours late one night in July 1987 that she simply could not account for. This would ultimately lead her to seek hypnotic regression in order to discover just what her subconscious was holding back from her. The most unusual night of her life was a little sketchy at first. Vague memories of two small aliens dragging her by the arms from her room to a strange craft came forth. Then she lost consciousness, or as Krista recalls, was rendered unconscious. When she awoke, she was on a table inside of the strange craft, which was now moving. She was extremely groggy and disorientated, to say the least. A strange entity who she would refer to as her guide approached her and handed her a drink, indicating that she should drink it straight away. She did, and almost immediately the grogginess left her. Then she was led to a doorway leading outside the craft, which had now, evidently, come to a stop. She stepped outside, finding herself on some kind of a hillside. It was extremely dark, all except for a faint light near a cavern, which they were now heading towards. As they neared this apparent opening, Krista could see a man dressed in a red military-type jumpsuit. He also carried a heavy-duty automatic weapon. By the time Krista was inside the tunnel, she realised she was walking into the side of a large hill or mountain. They walked for some time before another man stopped them at an apparent checkpoint. He had donned the same red military uniform as the first man. Krista looked around, noticing a futuristic-looking computer screen with cameras watching her. As the guide and the man spoke, she further noticed a large groove next to them. This, she could see, was a makeshift road or track, on which a vehicle would take you further into the mysterious mountain. On the other side stretched a long, lonely, but almost menacing hallway, home to many unseen rooms and offices. Before she could take in any more details, she was ushered into the vehicle which sat patiently on the groove. It moved forward for what seemed to be a very long time, and then they came to a stop at another checkpoint. This time, however, she was instructed to step onto a scale-like device which faced a large screen. As soon as she did, a frenzy of flashing lights and internal computer activity burst into life. Moments later, a card emerged. Two holes were punched into it, and it was given to Krista as an internal identification. They then proceeded onwards into the building. When she asked where they were going, her guide only replied that they were in level 1 of the facility. Before she could ask any more questions, they stepped into a strange elevator-type device. They moved down before coming to a stop at the next level. There, two more guards were awaiting their arrival, only these had a different colour suit to the others. They were then led down another long corridor. As she walked, she snatched glances inside the rooms alongside each side. Each room was an apparent hive of activity, with lines upon lines of computers and electronic devices along the walls. Strangest of all, though, was the lighting in the corridor. Try as she might, she could simply not see a source for it. It was both everywhere and nowhere at the same time. This last detail about the lighting might seem trivial and unimportant. However, it comes up repeatedly in countless other descriptions of the interiors of UFOs, as well as such facilities as the one that Krista found herself in. Indeed, this no-source lighting is perhaps a connecting factor in many of these otherwise unrelated cases. It was around this time when Krista began to become aware of many other people walking around. Her surroundings looked like a huge office building, which was separated into offices and cubicles. Then she would spot what seemed to be the heart of the open-plan facility, a giant open space that resembled a large factory warehouse. Inside and to the sides of this space sat several alien-type ships. Underneath them were grey-type aliens, seemingly performing repairs or maintenance. As she stepped into another elevator, she noticed there were more cameras positioned at all angles and in all directions. When they stepped off the elevator, a sign declared they were in level 5. As soon as she began to follow her guide, she began to get an uneasy and frightened feeling. As if sensing this, her guide informed her that as long as she remained with him, she wouldn't come to any harm. Despite this reassurance, there was something about the guards on this particular floor that seemed different from the others, and more to the point, that something was not friendly. As the guide brought them to a stop, he would hand her a bundle of garments and she was asked to change her clothes. As she unbundled the clothing, she could see it was a strange hospital gown, only it fastened on both sides, leaving her completely covered. As she changed, she noticed the guards in the room salute the guide she had followed. He wasn't dressed in any military attire, but it was clear that he had some kind of authority. While the guards all had an emblem or insignia on their uniforms, her guide simply donned a plain green suit. Before she could think about it any further, she was asked to step onto another scale-like gadget. Again, this activated all manner of activity and flashing lights. This time, though, the strange tones and frequencies caused severe discomfort to Krista's ears. When the activity had stopped, her guide approached her and asked her to follow him once more, and they made their way down another corridor. The further down this walkway they went, the stronger a smell similar to formaldehyde became. Suddenly, the corridor opened out into a large room. As Krista scanned her new environment, she immediately noticed large tanks with computerized gauges hooked to them. Tubes and a huge arm-like device was also connected to these tanks. She would estimate them to be around 4 feet tall, and she could see some kind of activity inside, but from the angle she was standing, she couldn't see inside the tanks themselves. When she walked over to the nearest one, her guide suddenly reached for her arm and pulled her back. Perhaps ominously, he stated that it would complicate matters if she was to see what was inside. They hastily left the room and ventured into a huge open lab-type space. Krista looked around the room in awe. She would later recall that despite her medical background, there were machines that she had never seen before. Furthermore, over by a desk or table was a grey alien, its back turned from her. When she heard the sound of metal against metal coming from the table, her medical background came into play once again. The metallic clinking reminded her of someone preparing surgical instruments ready for surgery. As thoughts rumbled around her mind, her guide told her to sit on the table near the grey entity. She refused. However, the smiling, friendly, assuring face of the guide was no more. Almost threateningly, he informed her that it would be much easier if she did as he asked. Then, another person entered the room, a man dressed in attire ready for the operating theatre. Her fears were gathering pace and beginning to go into overdrive. Her guide stepped over to this new arrival. Krista could see he had an identification card like the one issued to her earlier. As she watched in ever-increasing horror, the guide turned to her and claimed he would wait outside. It was then she noticed how truly cold it was in the room. The doctor called out for help and another grey alien appeared. Without realising how or why, she began to feel extremely drowsy, as if some kind of relaxant was taking effect. Then, everything went black. Her next memory is of regaining consciousness while she lay on an operating table. When she attempted to lift her head, the first thing she saw was two large black eyes staring down at her. When she focused, she could see the eyes belonged to one of the grey aliens. She noticed an intense stabbing pain and turned to see the doctor next to her. He was performing a procedure on her stomach, which now went completely numb. She wasn't at all aware of what they were doing, but the doctor and the grey aliens were fast and precise in their work. When they had completed the procedure, she was told to go into a small room off to the side where she would find her clothes. She did as instructed, and after dressing returned to the room. Her mysterious guide had also returned and was now talking to the doctor quietly. As he walked over to her, he brushed off any concerns by simply stating the procedure was necessary. She would follow her guide down another hallway, noticing a group of grey aliens past them heading in the opposite direction. She continued to ask questions in an attempt to understand what was happening. No answers, however, came back. Both she and her guide stepped inside a vehicle like the one she had entered the base in and proceeded to another part of the facility. Krista would later recall, "It was there I saw the most disturbing things of all." As she entered this next part of the facility, she was met with a sight she was simply not prepared for. Along the sides of the wall was row after row of tall, clear medical chambers, each one containing a person. Each was standing upright and had the look as if they were wax figures, with some of the chambers even containing animals. Something told her, however, while they may have looked like waxworks, she knew they were alive. She wasn't sure how long she stood staring at the morbid, grotesque scene in front of her before her guide ushered her into a waiting elevator. This time, as the custom-made car made its way upwards, she remained completely silent. Her mind was nearing breaking point, trying to make sense of what she had witnessed. She was soon on board one of the alien crafts, which proceeded to take her back home. Throughout the entire incident, Krista couldn't shake the feeling that these events had happened to her before, and not just once, but on several occasions. She has also, according to her claims, had several contacts with other extraterrestrial entities of a more friendly nature since the incident. As outlandish as this might be to some, and if such accounts as those of Krista Tilton are accurate and genuine, it would appear an invisible war and an entirely secret battleground is taking place in the background to the collective human existence. What the desired end goal of this apparent conflict might be, of course, is up for debate. What is perhaps also interesting to us here, and where we will turn our attention next, is that around the same time in Puerto Rico, another hotbed of claims of underground alien bases, another encounter would take place, and it would also feature an apparent alien entity known as the Doctor. UFO investigator Bob Pratt would state that the uniqueness of Puerto Rico was that UFO cases are occurring there all the time. Furthermore, Pratt would claim that the area had many sightings of UFOs entering or leaving the sea, as well as entering mountains and even landing. It would appear that the sightings are so varied and constant that the area is some kind of gateway or outpost allowing these seemingly otherworldly visitors access to our world from theirs. The story of Carlos Macedo, who would speak to Pratt in December 1988, 6 months after his encounter, would appear to further confirm these assertions. On the night in question, despite the late hour, it was still extremely hot in Carlos Macedo's home. So much so that he left the bed he shared with his wife and went out to the couch in the sitting room. It did appear to be a little cooler in the next room, but not much. Before he could completely settle into sleep, however, a humming noise began to ring in his ears. It was getting louder and seemingly closer. A glow began to push through the window from outside. He sat up, nervous and unsure what to do. When a tap at the window came, he jumped a little. Slowly, he moved to the glass and peered out. Looking back at him were three small humanoid figures, each with large dark eyes and much larger heads for their bodies, which were tiny and frail by comparison. They stood around 3 to 4 feet in height, and each had on grey cream overalls like a mechanic would wear. Before he could comprehend anything else, a voice appeared in his mind asking him to come outside. It must have belonged to one of the creatures, but he saw nothing to indicate they had physically spoken. He looked past the three figures and saw a large, shiny saucer-type craft waiting behind them. He calmly opened the door and followed them as they walked towards the gleaming silver object. As he walked, the voice continued, saying not to be afraid and that they were not there to hurt him. As it spoke, any fear that was still inside him left. By the time he reached the craft, he was right at the side of Highway 101. He could now see an array of lights on the underside of the object and definite windows of some sort on the upper raised section. It stood on a set of legs that came out from the base of the craft, and a set of ladders protruded from an open middle section. Interestingly, this description matches many other such reports of close contact, lending the account further credibility. The creatures motioned for him to climb the ladder and get on board, which he did so. Upon climbing into what seems to be the control room, he made out different panels, controls and little lights. There were also other creatures like the three that had come for him, all busy at their apparent stations. In the middle of the room was another figure, only this one was drastically different. The being who had spoken to him inside his head introduced Macedo to this strange different humanoid. He was the captain, or the doctor. The doctor was much bigger than the others, almost the same height as Macedo himself. His head was still slightly larger than his frame suggested, but his eyes were not as out of proportion. Unlike the smaller creatures, the doctor had a nose similar to a human nose, but with a definite point. Around his frame, this leading humanoid was covered from his feet to his neck and right down to his hands in a white tunic. Although he couldn't see clearly, Macedo believed he could make out some kind of white footwear. According to the doctor, Macedo had been brought there so that he could share something important with him and that he could then tell other people. As he was contemplating this mind-blowing situation, the humming sound returned. Metallic noises also filled the air, and Macedo could feel activity below him. He guessed the legs were retreating, and a moment later, he could feel an anticipation of liftoff. A second or two after that, they did indeed take off at great speed. Mikado managed to look out of the window in the control room. Expecting to see the void of outer space, he was a little disappointed when he was greeted with the view of a local mountain range he was very familiar with. The doctor informed him they were heading for a deep ravine. As the craft dived, Mikado began to pull back from the window, fearing they were going to crash into the mountainside. To his amazement, the side of the mountain opened up, and the craft went inside and progressed down a deep tunnel. Suddenly, the craft came out of the secret shaft and was in a huge open area. Mikado looked around, taking in the scene as quickly as he could. They were inside what seemed to be a huge, gigantic cave, with waves of activity going on all around them. Their ship would land in a flat section, dominated by other similar vehicles, as well as many drastically different ones. Mikado would later state there were crafts of all shapes, round, square, triangular, and shapes he couldn't quite describe. The doctor asked Mikado to follow him and join him outside the craft. As he did so, he was given a pair of huge dark glasses so that he could see everything clearly. As he ventured outside the craft and into a huge cavern-like base, he noticed how bright the whole area was. He could not see where the illumination came from, however, it was just there. Once more, we remind ourselves that this is an often repeated claim made in such close contact cases. So much so, it suggests a very definite method of lighting or energy use that is completely unknown to us. As he scanned the huge behemoth-like walls, he could see they were covered in what looked to be shiny metal plates. The whole base was swarming with the small creatures, working on crafts or at workstations. As he looked down to the ground of the base, he could make out buildings, neatly laid out. It made him think of how military barracks might look from the air. The doctor's voice came into his head once more, stating they had called this base home for a very long time. Furthermore, they didn't wish to leave, nor did they wish any hostilities to human beings. In fact, they wished Mikado and others like him to prepare people and tell them of their desire to interrelate with humans openly. After some time of conversation, Mikado went back on board the ship, which left the base the way it entered, via the long tunnel and then out of the side of the ancient mountain range. As the craft left the mountain behind, he could see the landscape rearranging itself. He would state to Pratt, it was as though a part of the mountain, along with its trees and grass and everything else, just lifted up. He would arrive back at his home shortly after. Upon opening the door and entering his house, he found his wife still sleeping. He lay down and went to sleep himself. He awoke the next morning and knew that he had not dreamt the events of the previous evening. What's more, he told his wife of his adventures, and she believed him without question. What is also interesting about Mikado's account is that many others who have had similar close encounters with the grey aliens described by Mikado also report being taken to these areas and report similar mountain bases. Pratt himself would speak to at least two people, a local woman and a member of the Puerto Rican military, who had experienced similar encounters to Mikado. Might this base explain the huge number of sightings within this particular region of the world? The fact is, these are just three of some of the many truly bizarre accounts of alien abduction. Ultimately, there are many multiple others on record, each as unique as they are strange, although at the same time, each sharing remarkably similar details. Could it be that more people have been abducted than even those in the UFO community can contemplate? May there even be more outrageous and curious tales still to be told? If there are only partial truths to any of these types of encounters, not only does it force us to contemplate the reality of extraterrestrial entities from elsewhere, but also the very nature of our reality itself. For now though, I will simply thank you for joining me, and be sure to leave any thoughts in the comments and check out the links for further reading on some of the cases and theories we've been discussing here today. Remember to subscribe to our channel and follow us on social media to keep up to date on future podcasts, articles and videos. And of course, if there is anything you want us to look at in future podcast episodes, just get in touch at marcus@ufoinsight.com. Until next time, goodbye and take care.